shook him like a disobedient dog until tears came into his eyes. "Listen hard, because I'm not telling you again. Fire is a dangerous creature," he had shouted at Farid. "Fire is not your friend. It will kill you if you don't respect it, and its smoke will give you away to your enemies."
"But it's your friend,"
the boy had stammered defiantly.
"Nonsense. I'm not careless, that's all. I take note of the wind. You let it play with the fire. I've told you 100 times. Never light a fire when it's windy. Now go and look for Gwyn."
"It is your friend, though," the boy had muttered before running off. "Or anyway, it obeys you better than the marten does."
He was right there, though that didn't mean much, for a marten obeys only itself, and even fire didn't obey Dustfinger in this world as well as in his own, where the flames turned to flower shapes whenever he told them to. They had forked up in the air for him, like trees branching in the night, and rained down sparks. They had roared and whispered with their crackling voices. They had danced when he said the word. The flames here were both tame and mutinous, strange, silent beasts that sometimes bit the hand that fed them. Only occasionally, on cold nights when there was nothing but the flames to stave off his loneliness, did he think he heard them calling to him. But they whispered words he didn't understand. However, the boy was probably right. Yes, fire was his friend, but it was also the reason why Capricorn had summoned him back in that other life.
"Show me how to play with fire," he had said when his men dragged Dustfinger before him, and Dustfinger had obeyed. He still regretted teaching him so much, for Capricorn loved to give fire free rein, catching it again only when it had eaten its fill of crops and stables, houses, and anything that couldn't run fast enough.
"Is he still away?"
Farid was leaning against the rough bark of the tree. The boy was as quiet as a snake. Dustfinger always jumped when he appeared so suddenly.
"Yes," he said. "Luck's on our side."
On the day they came to this hideout, Capricorn's car had been standing in the parking area, but that afternoon two of the boys had begun polishing its silver paintwork until they could see their reflections in it, and shortly before it was dark, he had driven off. Capricorn often had himself driven around the countryside to the villages farther down the coast, or to one of his other bases, as he liked to call them, although these so-called bases were often little more than a hut in the woods with a couple of bored men guarding it. Like Dustfinger, he couldn't drive a car, but some of his men had mastered the art of it. Hardly any of them held a driver's license, though, because to pass the test, they would have to be able to read.
"Yes, I'll go over there again tonight," murmured Dustfinger. "He won't be away much longer, and Buster is sure to be back soon, too."
Buster's car had not been in the lot at all since they'd come here. It was unusual for it to be gone so long, because Buster didn't like to be away from the village for any length of time. Were he and Flatnose still lying in the ruined cottage, bound and gagged?
"Good. When do we start?"
Farid sounded as if he wanted to get moving at once.
"After sunset. They'll all be in the church eating then."
Dustfinger shooed a fly away from his binoculars.
"I'm going alone. You're to stay here and keep an eye on our things."
"No."
"Yes. This will be dangerous. There's someone I want to visit, and to do that, I have to get into the yard behind Capricorn's house."
The boy gazed at him with eyes full of astonishment. Eyes that sometimes looked as if they had seen too much already.
"Surprised, are you?" Dustfinger suppressed a smile. "You wouldn't have thought I had any friends in Capricorn's house."
The boy shrugged his shoulders and looked over to the village. A vehicle was driving into the parking lot, a dusty truck with two goats tethered on the open loading platform.
"Look at that. Another farmer's lost his goats," muttered Dustfinger. "Wise of him to give them up freely, or there'd have been a note pinned to his stable door this evening."
Farid looked at him, an unspoken question in his eyes.
The red rooster crows tomorrow. That's what the note would say. It's the only thing Capricorn's men know how to write. And sometimes they just hang a dead rooster above the door. Anyone can understand that.
Red rooster? The boy shook his head. Is it a curse or something?
No, good heavens, you sound like Buster. Dustfinger laughed quietly.
Capricorn's men were getting out of the truck. The smaller of them was carrying two plastic bags filled to bursting. The other was hauling the goats off the loading platform.
The red rooster means fire.
The fire they'll light in the farmers' outhouses or olive groves. And sometimes the rooster crows in the attic of the house, or, if a farmer has been particularly stubborn, in his children's bedroom.
We almost all have something we love dearly.
The men were leading the goats into the village. Dustfinger knew by his limp that one of them was Cockerel. He had often wondered whether Capricorn knew about all the little deals his men did, or whether they were working for themselves on the side now and then. Farid caught a grasshopper in the hollow of his hand and watched it through his fingers.
"I'm going with you all the same," he said.
"No."
"I'm not afraid."
"That makes it worse."
Capricorn had had floodlights installed after the escape of his captives, outside the church, on the roof of his house, and in the parking area. They didn't exactly make it easier to walk the streets unobserved. The first night after their arrival here, Dustfinger had stolen into the village, his scarred face blackened with soot because it was too easily recognizable. Capricorn had also reinforced the guards on sentry duty, probably because of all the treasure Silvertongue had brought him. By now, of course, that treasure had disappeared into the cellar of his house and was carefully locked in the heavy safes that Capricorn had fitted there. He didn't care to spend money. Like the dragons of legend, he hoarded it. Sometimes he placed a ring on his finger or put a necklace around the neck of a maid who happened to take his fancy.
"Who are you going to meet?"
"None of your business."
The boy let the grasshopper go again. It hopped rapidly away on its spindly olive-green legs.
"A woman," said Dustfinger. "One of Capricorn's maids. She's helped me a couple of times before."
"The one in the photo in your backpack?"
Dustfinger lowered his binoculars.
"How do you know what's in my backpack?"
The boy hunched his head down between his shoulders, like someone used to being beaten for every thoughtless remark.
"I was looking for matches."
"If I catch you with your fingers in my pack again, I'll tell Gwyn to bite them off."
The boy grinned.
"Gwyn never bites me."
He was right. The Martin was crazy about Farid.
"Where is that faithless animal, anyway?"
Dustfinger peered through the branches. "I haven't seen him since yesterday."
"I think he's found a female."
Farid picked up a stick and poked at the dead leaves that lay everywhere under the trees. By night, the rustling leaves would give away anyone trying to steal up to their camp in silence.
"If you don't take me with you tonight," said the boy without looking at Dustfinger, "I'll just follow you anyway."
"If you follow me, I will beat you black and blue."
Farid lowered his head and gazed inscrutably at his bare toes. Then he glanced at the ruined walls where they had made their camp.
"And don't start on about the old woman's ghost again," said Dustfinger crossly. "How often do I have to tell you all the danger is over in those houses? Light a fire in the hollow if you're afraid of the dark."
"Ghosts don't fear fire."
The boy's voice was hardly more than a whisper. Sighing, Dustfinger clambered down from his looking post. The boy was almost as bad as Buster. He wasn't afraid of curses, ladders, or black cats, but he saw ghosts everywhere, and not just the ghost of the old woman now sleeping buried somewhere in the hard ground. Farid saw other ghosts and spirits, too, whole armies of them, malignant, all-powerful beings who tore the hearts out of poor mortal boys and ate them. He refused to believe it when Dustfinger told him they hadn't come with him. He had left them behind in a book along with the thieves who used to beat and kick him. He might well die of fear if he stayed here alone all night.
"Oh, very well, then, you'd better come,"
said Dustfinger, but not a squeak out of you, understand? The men down there aren't ghosts, they're real people, and they have knives and guns.
Gratefully, Farid flung his thin arms around him.
Yes, all right, that'll do, said Dustfinger, pushing him away. Come on, let's see if you can stand on one hand yet.
The boy obediently obeyed.
Bright red in the face, he balanced first on his right hand and then on his left, bare legs up in the air. After 3 wobbly seconds, he landed in the prickly leaves of a rock rose, but he promptly got up, pulled a few thorns out of his foot, and tried again.
Dustfinger sat down under a tree.
It was high time to get rid of the boy, but how? You could throw stones at a dog, but a boy? Why hadn't he stayed with Silvertongue, who knew more about looking after young people, and it was Silvertongue, after all, who had brought him here? But no, the boy had to run after him, Dustfinger.
I'm going to look for Gwyn, said Dustfinger, getting to his feet.
Without a word, Farid trotted after him.
Chapter 32 Back Again. Capricorn's village didn't look like a dangerous place on the grey, rainy day when Maggie set eyes on it again. The houses standing among the green hills were a miserable sight, with not a ray of sunlight to brighten their ruins. Maggie could hardly believe these same houses had looked so menacing on the night of their escape.
Interesting, whispered Fenolio as Buster drove into the parking lot. Do you know, this village is very like one of the settings I thought up for Inkheart. Well, there's no fortress, but the landscape around is similar, and the age of the village would be about right. Did you know that Inkheart is set in a world not unlike our own medieval times? Of course, I added some things from the fairies and the giants.
Maggie wasn't really listening to them now. She remembered how, after their flight from the sheds where Capricorn had held them captive, she had stumbled toward Eleanor's car, and the man had shot at them. She had hoped she would never again have to see this parking lot, the church, and these hills.
Come on, get moving,
grunted Flatnose, opening the car door.
I expect you remember the way.
Oh, yes, Maggie could remember, even though it did all seem rather different today. Fenolio looked around the gloomy alleys like a tourist, staring at windows and open doors as if he'd paid for entry.
"I know this village," he whispered to Maggie. "I mean, I've heard of it. There's more than one sad story about the place. That earthquake in the last century, and then in the last war there was—"
"Save your tongue for later, Scribbler,"
Buster interrupted. "I don't like whispering."
Fenolio shot him an angry glance, but fell silent and did not utter another sound until they had reached the church.
"Well, go on, open the door. What are you waiting for?"
growled Flatnose. With Fenolio's help, Maggie opened the heavy wooden door. The cool air that met them smelled as musty as on the day she had entered the church with Moe and Eleanor. Nothing much had changed inside. The red walls looked even more threatening on this overcast day, and the expression on the doll-like face of Capricorn's statue seemed even more malevolent than before, if that were possible. The braziers in which the books had been burned still stood in the same place, but there was no sign of Capricorn's chair at the top of the steps. 2 of his men were just carrying a new chair up them. The old woman, who looked like a magpie and who Maggie didn't really like to remember, was standing beside them, impatiently giving directions. Buster pushed aside 2 women who were kneeling in the middle of the nave cleaning the floor and strode toward the altar steps.
"Where's Capricorn, Mortala?"
he called to the old woman as he approached.
"I've news for him, important news."
The old woman didn't even turn toward him.
"Father to the right, you fools,"
she ordered the 2 men who were still struggling with the heavy armchair.
"Yes, that'll do."
Then she turned toward Buster, her face expressionless.
"We expected you back before this," she said.
"What do you mean?"
Buster had raised his voice, but Maggie caught the uncertainty it revealed.
it sounded almost as if he were afraid of the old woman.
"Do you know how many villages there are down this damn coast? And we weren't even sure whether Silvertongue was still in the area, but I can rely on my nose, and as you see,"
he said, nodding in Meggy's direction,
"I've done the job."
"You have?"
The magpie looked past Buster to where Meggy and Fenulia were standing with Flatnose.
"All I see is the girl and an old man. Where's her father?" "He wasn't there, but he'll come after her. The girl's the best bait we could have."
"And how will he know she's here?"
"I left him a message. Since when can you write?"
Meggy saw Buster's shoulders tense with anger.
"I left him my name. He won't need more than that to know where to find his precious little daughter. Tell Capricorn I'm shutting her in one of the cages."
With these words he turned on his heel and stalked back to Meggy and Fenulia.
"Capricorn's not here, and I don't know when he'll be back,"
Mortala called after him, "but I'm in charge until then, and in my view, you haven't been doing your job recently as well as we expect."
Buster swung around as if he had been bitten on the back of the neck, but Mortala continued unmoved.
"First, you let Dustfinger steal a set of keys from you, then you lose our dogs, and we have to send a search party out into the mountains for you, and now this. Give me your keys."
The magpie put out her hand.
"What?"
Buster went white, like a boy being punished in front of the whole class.
"You heard.
I'm going to look after them. The keys to the cages, the crypt, and the fuel store. Bring them here."
Buster didn't move.
"You've no right to them," he snapped. "Capricorn gave them to me, and he's the only one who can take them away again."
He turned around once more.
"And so he will," Mortala called after him, "and he'll expect your report as soon as he gets back. Maybe he'll understand better than I do why you didn't bring Silvertongue."
Buster did not reply. Seizing Meggy and Fenulia by the arms, he hauled them toward the church door. Mortala, the magpie, called something after him, but Meggy couldn't make out what it was, and Buster did not turn back this time. He locked her and Fenulio in the shed marked Number 5, the one where Farid had been imprisoned.
"Okay, you can wait here till your father arrives,"
he said before pushing Meggy inside. She felt as if this were a nightmare, and she was dreaming it all over again. Only here there wasn't even musty straw to sit on, and the light bulb hanging from the ceiling didn't work, although a little daylight did come in through a narrow hole in the wall.
"Oh, wonderful," said Fenulio, sitting down on the cold floor with a sigh. "A cowshed! How unimaginative! I really would have expected Capricorn to at least have a proper dungeon for his prisoners."
"Cowshed?" Meggy leaned her back against the wall. She heard the rain pattering against the locked door.
"Well, yes, what did you think it was? They always built houses like this in the old days, room for the livestock on the ground floor and living quarters for the family above them. They still keep their goats and donkeys like that in many mountain villages. Haven't you noticed when they've driven the animals out to pasture in the morning, there are steaming heaps of dung left lying in the streets, and you tread in them when you go to buy your breakfast rolls?"
Fenulio plucked a hair from one nostril, looked at it as if he couldn't believe anything quite so bristly grew in his nose, and flicked it away.
"This is really rather uncanny," he murmured. "That's exactly how I imagined Capricorn's mother, that nose, the eyes set close together, even the way she folds her arm and her chin juts forward."
Meggy looked at him incredulously.
"Capricorn's mother? The magpie?"
"Magpie, is that what you call her?" Fenulio laughed softly. "She has exactly the same nickname in my story. Amazing! Be careful of her, she's not a very pleasant character."
"I thought she was his housekeeper."
"That's probably what you're supposed to think. So keep our little secret to yourself for now, all right?"
Meggy agreed, although she didn't really understand. What did it matter who the old woman was? It all came to the same thing. This time there was no dust finger to open the door in the night. It had all been for nothing, as if they had never run away at all. She went over to the locked door and pressed her hands against it.
"He'll come," she whispered. "Mo will come. And then they'll lock us up here forever and ever."
Fenolia got up and went over to her.
"There, there," he said, putting his arms around her and letting her bury her face in his jacket.
It was made of rough fabric and smelled of pipe tobacco.
"I'll think of something," he whispered to Maggie. "After all, I invented these villains. It'll be an odd thing if I can't get rid of them. Your father had an idea, but..."
Maggie raised her face, wet with tears, and looked at him hopefully. But the old man shook his head.
"Later. Now tell me what makes Capricorn so interested in your father. Is it something to do with the way he reads aloud?"
Maggie nodded and wiped the tears from her eyes.
"He wants Mo to read aloud to him here, to bring someone out of a book, an old friend."
Fenolia gave her a handkerchief. A few crumbs of tobacco fell from it when she blew her nose.
"A friend? Capricorn has no friends."
The old man frowned. Then Maggie felt him suddenly take a deep breath.
"Who is it?"
she asked, but Fenolia just mopped a tear off her cheek.
"Someone I hope you'll never meet except between the covers of a book," he said evasively.
Then he turned and began pacing up and down.
"Capricorn will be back soon," he added. "I must think how best to confront him."
But Capricorn did not come. Darkness fell outside, and still no one had fetched them from their prison. They weren't even brought anything to eat. It grew cold when the night air came in through the hole in the wall, and they huddled side by side on the hard floor to keep warm.
"Is Master still very superstitious?" Fenolio asked at some point in the night.
"Yes, very," replied Maggie. "Dustfinger likes taunting him about it."
"Good," murmured Fenolio.
But he would say no more.
Chapter 33 Capricorn's Maid. Dustfinger set out when the night could grow no darker. The sky was overcast, with not a single star shining. Only the moon showed occasionally between the clouds, as thin as a slice of lemon. Dustfinger was glad of such darkness, but the boy jumped whenever a twig brushed his face.
"For heaven's sake, I should have left you with the marten after all,"
Dustfinger snapped as Farid clutched his arm in fright yet again.
"You'll give us away yet with your teeth chattering like that. Look ahead of you. That's what ought to scare you. Guns, not ghosts."
Before them, only a little way off now, lay Capricorn's village. The new floodlights poured light as bright as day over the grey houses.
"And they say this electricity of theirs is a blessing,"
whispered Dustfinger as they skirted the parking area. A bored-looking guard was strolling around among the parked vehicles. Yawning, he leaned against the truck which Cockerel had used to bring the goats back that afternoon, and put on a pair of headphones.
"Excellent. An army could march up now and he wouldn't hear it,"
muttered Dustfinger.
"If Basta were here, he'd discipline the man for that. Shut him up in Capricorn's cow sheds for 3 days with nothing to eat."
"Why don't we go over the rooftops?"
All the fear had gone from Farid's face. The guard with his shotgun didn't alarm the boy half as much as his imaginary ghosts. Dustfinger could only shake his head over such foolishness, but the rooftop idea wasn't stupid. A vine that hadn't been pruned for years grew up one of the houses beside the parking area. As soon as the guard wandered over to the other side of the area, swaying in time to the music that was filling his ears, Dustfinger clambered up its woody branches. The boy climbed even better than he did and proudly offered him a hand once he was up on the roof. They moved on stealthily, like stray cats, past chimneys, aerials, and Capricorn's floodlights, which were angled downward and left everything behind them in the cover of darkness. Once a shingle came loose under Dustfinger's boots.
but he managed to catch it just in time before the terracotta tile could fall and break in the street below. When they reached the square where the church and Capricorn's house stood, they let themselves down from a gutter. For a few breathless moments, Dustfinger ducked behind a stack of empty fruit crates, looking out for guards. Both the square itself and the narrow alley to one side of Capricorn's house were bathed in light. A black cat was sitting on the edge of the well outside the church. Buster's heart would probably have missed a beat at the sight of it, but Dustfinger was much more concerned about the guards outside Capricorn's house. Two of them were lounging by the entrance. It was one of these, a small, sturdy man who had found Dustfinger 4 years ago in a town up in the north, just as he was about to give his last show. He and two companions had dragged the fire-eater back here, where Capricorn had, in his own characteristic way, questioned him about Silvertongue and the book. The two guards were arguing, and as they were so absorbed, Dustfinger plucked up his courage, took a few rapid steps, and disappeared down the alley beside Capricorn's house. Farid followed him, as soundless as his own shadow come to life. Capricorn's house was a large, bulky building, which might once have been the village hall, a disused monastery or a school. All the windows were dark, and there were no other guards to be seen in the alley, but Dustfinger remained watchful. He knew the guards liked to lurk in dark doorways, invisible as ravens at night in their black suits. Indeed, Dustfinger knew almost everything about Capricorn's village. He had walked these streets often enough since Capricorn brought him here to look for Silvertongue and the book. Whenever he felt the sharp pangs of homesickness, he had come back here to his old enemies, where he didn't feel quite so out of place. Even his fear of Buster's knife couldn't keep him away. Dustfinger picked up a flat stone, beckoned Farid to his side, and threw the stone down the alley. Nothing moved. As he had hoped, the guard was doing his rounds. Dustfinger hurried to the high wall behind which Capricorn's garden lay, vegetable beds, fruit trees and herbs, protected by the wall from the cold wind that sometimes blew from the nearby mountains. Dustfinger had often entertained the maids as they hoed the beds. There were no floodlights in the garden, no guards either. Who'd steal vegetables? And only a door with a grating over it, a door that was locked at night, led from the yard into the house. The dog kennels lay beyond the wall too, but when Dustfinger swung himself up and over, they were empty. The dogs had not come back from the hills. They'd shown more sense than Dustfinger expected, and Buster obviously hadn't gotten new dogs yet. Stupid of him. Stupid Buster. Dustfinger signalled to the boy to follow him and stole past the carefully tended beds until he had reached the back door with the grating. The boy looked at him questioningly when he saw the solid bars, but Dustfinger just laid a finger to his lips and looked up at one of the windows on the second floor. The shutters, black as night, were open. Dustfinger mewed in so lifelike a fashion that several cats answered, but nothing moved behind the window. Dustfinger cursed under his breath, listened to the sounds of the night for a moment, then imitated the shrill cry of a bird of prey. Farid jumped and pressed close to the wall of the house. This time something did move behind the upstairs window. A woman leaned out of it. When Dustfinger waved to her, she waved back, then quickly disappeared.
"Don't look like that," whispered Dustfinger, seeing Farid's anxious glance. "We can trust her. Quite a few of the women aren't too fond of Capricorn and his men. Many of them don't even come here of their own free will. But they're all afraid of him, afraid they'll lose their jobs, afraid he'll burn the roofs over the heads of their families if they talk about what goes on here. Or perhaps send Buster to call on them with his knife. Reysa doesn't have to worry about that kind of thing. She has no family."
"Not any more," he added to himself, silently. The door behind the grating opened, and Reysa's anxious face appeared behind the bars. It looked pale beneath her dark blonde hair.
"How are you?"
Dustfinger went over to the grating and put his hand through the bars. Smiling, Reza pressed it and nodded at the boy.
"This is Farid." Dustfinger lowered his voice. "You could say he's adopted me, but you can trust him. He doesn't care for Capricorn any more than we do."
Reza nodded, looked at him reproachfully, and shook her head.
"Yes, I know it wasn't sensible to come back. You heard what happened."
Dustfinger couldn't prevent something like pride from creeping into his voice.
"They thought I'd put up with anything, but they were wrong. There's still one copy of the book left, and I'm going to get my hands on it. Don't look at me like that. Do you know where Capricorn keeps it?"
Reza shook her head. There was a rustling behind them, and Dustfinger spun around, but it was only a mouse scurrying over the quiet yard. Reza took a pencil and a piece of paper out of her dressing-gown pocket. She wrote slowly and neatly, knowing that Dustfinger found it easier to read capital letters. She had taught him to read and write so they could communicate with one another. As usual, it took some time for the letters to make sense to Dustfinger. He felt a fresh sense of pride every time those spindly symbols finally fitted together into words, and he could get their secret out of them.
"I'll look around," he read softly. "Good, but be careful. I don't want you risking your pretty neck."
He bent over the paper again.
"What do you mean? The magpie has Basta's keys now."
He gave her the note back. Farid watched Reza writing, as spellbound as if he were watching someone work magic.
"I think you'll have to teach him, too," Dustfinger whispered through the bars. "See how he's staring at you?"
Reza looked up and smiled at Farid. Awkwardly, he looked away. Reza pressed her finger around her face.
"You think he's a nice boy?"
Dustfinger twisted his mouth in a teasing smile, while Farid felt so embarrassed he didn't know where to look.
"And what about me? Beautiful as the moon, am I? What am I to make of that as a compliment? You mean I have almost as many craters?"
Reza pressed her hand over her lips. It was easy to amuse her. She laughed like a young girl. That was the only time you could hear her voice. Shots rang out in the night. Reza clung to the bars, and Farid, terrified, crouched down at the foot of the wall. Dustfinger pulled him to his feet again.
"It's nothing," he whispered. "Just the guards taking potshots at cats. They always do that when they're bored."
The boy looked at him with disbelief, but Reza went on writing.
"She took the keys away to punish him," Dustfinger read. "Basta won't like that at all. The way he acted with those keys, you'd have thought he was looking after Capricorn's most treasured possession."
Reza mimed taking a knife from her belt, looking so grim that Dustfinger almost laughed out loud. He quickly glanced around, but the yard was silent as the grave between its high walls.
"Oh, yes, I can well imagine that Basta's furious," he whispered. "In that mood, he'll do anything to please Capricorn. Slit throats, gash open faces, anything."
Reza reached for the paper again, and once more it took him a painfully long time to decipher her clear, neat writing.
"Oh, so you've heard about Silvertongue. You want to know who he is? Well, but for me, he'd still be locked up in Capricorn's sheds. What else? Ask Farid. Silvertongue plucked the boy out of his own story, too, like a ripe apple. Luckily, he didn't bring out any of the ghouls the boy keeps carrying on about. Yes, he reads aloud very well indeed, much better than Darius. As you can see, Farid doesn't limp. His face probably always looked the way it does now, and he still has his voice, too, even if you might not think so at the moment."
Farid cast him an angry glance.
"What does Silvertongue look like? Well, I can at least tell you that Basta hasn't decorated his face yet."
A shutter creaked above them. Dustfinger pressed close to the grating. Only the wind, he thought. Nothing but the wind. Farid was staring at him, eyes wide with fear. No doubt the creaking sounded to him like a demon, but the figure who leaned out of the window above them was a creature of flesh and blood.
Mortala, or the Magpie, as she was secretly nicknamed. She was in charge of all the maids, and nothing was safe from the Magpie's eyes and ears, not even the secrets the women whispered to each other in their bedrooms by night. Even Capricorn's strongboxes had better accommodations than his maidservants. They all slept in his house, four to a room, crammed in like sardines, except for those who had struck up a relationship with one of his men and moved to another house. The Magpie leaned over the windowsill and breathed in the cool night air. She stayed there for what seemed to be endless time, so long that Dustfinger could happily have wrung her neck. But finally, she appeared to have filled every inch of her body with fresh air and closed the window.
"I must go, but I'll be back tomorrow evening. Maybe you'll have found out something about the book by then."
Dustfinger squeezed Race's hand. Her fingers were rough from laundry work and cleaning.
"I know I've said it before, but all the same, be careful, and keep away from Basta."
Racer shrugged her shoulders. How else could she respond to such unnecessary advice? Almost all the women in the village kept away from Basta, but he didn't keep away from them. Dustfinger waited outside the grating until Racer was back in her room. She signalled to him through the window with a candle. The guard in the parking lot still had his headphones on. Deep in his own thoughts, he was dancing among the cars, shotgun in his outstretched arms, as if he were dancing with a girl. By the time he finally looked their way, the night had already swallowed up Dustfinger and Farid. They met no one on the way back to their hiding place, only a fox who slunk away with hunger in his eyes. Gwyn was eating a bird inside the walls of the burnt-out cottage. Its feathers were shadows in the darkness.
"Has she always been mute?"
asked the boy as Dustfinger laid down under the trees to sleep.
"As long as I've known her,"
replied Dustfinger, turning his back to the boy. Farid lay down beside him. He had made this habit from the first, and however often Dustfinger moved away, the boy was always close beside him when he woke up.
"The photograph in your backpack," he said. "It is her."
"So?"
The boy did not reply.
"If you've taken a fancy to her," Dustfinger mocked him, "forget it. She's one of Capricorn's favorite maids. She's even allowed to take him his breakfast and help him get dressed."
"How long has she been with him?"
5 years, said Dustfinger, and in all that time, Capricorn has never once let her leave the village. She can't even go out of the house very often. She ran away twice, but she never got far. One of those times, a snake bit her. She never told me how Capricorn punished her, but I know she never tried to run away again."
There was a rustling behind them. Farid jumped, but it was only Gwyn. The marten was licking his muzzle as he leapt and landed on the boy's stomach. Laughing, Farid plucked a feather out of his fur. Gwyn snuffled busily around the boy's chin and nose, as if he had missed him. Then he disappeared into the night again.
"He really is a nice marten," whispered Farid.
"No, he's not," said Dustfinger, pulling his thin blanket up to his chin. "He probably likes you because you smell like a girl."
Farid's only answer was a long silence.
"She looks like her," he said at last, just as Dustfinger was dropping off to sleep. "Silvertongue's daughter, I mean. She has the same mouth and the same eyes, and she laughs in the same way."
"Nonsense," said Dustfinger. "That's not the slightest resemblance. They both have blue eyes, that's all. It's not unusual here. Hurry up and go to sleep."
The boy obeyed. He wrapped himself in the sweater that Dustfinger had given him and turned his back to his companion. Soon he was breathing as peacefully as a baby. But Dustfinger lay awake all night, staring at the stars. Chapter 34 Capricorn's Secrets. Capricorn received Maggie and Fenolio in the church. About a dozen of his men were with him. He was sitting in the new black leather armchair they had installed under Mortala's supervision.
and this time, for once, his suit was not red, but pale yellow, like the morning daylight filtering in through the windows. He had them brought to him early, while the mist still hung above the hills, with the sun swimming in it like a ball floating in murky water.
"By all the letters of the alphabet!" whispered Fenolio, as he and Maggie walked down the nave of the church with Buster close behind them. "He really does look exactly the way I imagined him. Colourless as a glass of milk, I think that's how I put it."
He began walking faster, as if he couldn't wait to see his creation at close quarters. Maggie could hardly keep up with him, and Buster held him back before he had reached the steps.
"Yeah, what's the idea?" he hissed. "Not so fast. And bow, understand?"
Fenolio merely glanced scornfully at him and remained perfectly upright. Buster raised his hand, but when Capricorn almost imperceptibly shook his head, he lowered it again like a rebuked child. Mortala was standing beside Capricorn's chair, her arms folded like wings behind her back.
"You know, Buster, I still wonder what you were thinking of not to bring her father to," said Capricorn, letting his gaze wander from Maggie to Fenolio's turtle-like face. "He wasn't there, I told you,"
Buster sounded injured.
"Was I supposed to sit around waiting for him like a toad beside a pond? He'll soon be here of his own accord. We all know how besotted he is with his daughter. I'll bet my knife he'll be here by tomorrow at the latest."
"Your knife? But you've already mislaid your knife once recently."
The mockery in Mortala's voice made Buster grind his teeth.
"You're slipping, Buster," remarked Capricorn. "Your hot temper clouds your judgment. But let's move on to this other souvenir of yours."
Fenolio had never taken his eyes off Capricorn. He was looking at him like a painter, seeing one of his pictures again after many long years, and judging by the expression on his face, what he saw pleased him. Maggie couldn't see a trace of fear in his eyes, just incredulous curiosity and satisfaction with himself. She also saw that Capricorn did not care for that expression at all. He wasn't used to being inspected as fearlessly as this old man was scrutinizing him now, not even by his men.
"Buster has told me some strange things about you, Senor Fenolio."
Maggie was watching Capricorn's face. Had he ever read the name on the cover of Inkheart, just below the title itself?
"Even his voice sounds the way I imagined," Fenolio whispered to her.
She thought he was captivated, like a child looking at a caged lion, except that Capricorn wasn't in a cage. At a signal from him, Buster jammed his elbow into the old man's back so roughly that Fenolio was left gasping for air.
"I don't like whispering in my presence," Capricorn said softly, while Fenolio was still struggling to get his breath back. "As I said, Buster has told me a strange story. He says you claimed to be the man who wrote a certain book. What was its name again?"
"Inkheart." Fenolio rubbed his aching back. "Its title is Inkheart because it's about a man whose wicked heart is as black as ink, filled with darkness and evil. I still like the title."
Capricorn raised his eyebrows and smiled.
"And how am I supposed to take that? As a compliment, maybe. After all, it's my story you're talking about." "No, no, it's mine. You just appear in it."
Maggie saw Buster look inquiringly at Capricorn, but he shook his head again very slightly, and Fenolio's back was spared for the time being.
"How interesting. So you're sticking to your lies."
Capricorn uncrossed his legs and rose from his chair. With slow strides, he came down the steps. Fenolio smiled conspiratorially at Maggie.
"What are you grinning for?"
Capricorn's voice was as sharp as Buster's knife now. He stopped right in front of Fenolio.
Oh, I was only thinking that vanity is one of the qualities I gave you. Vanity and...
Fenolio paused for effect before continuing.
And a few other weaknesses that I expect you'd rather I didn't mention in front of your henchmen.
Capricorn examined him in silence, a silence that seemed to last an eternity. Then he smiled. It was a faint, thin smile, little more than a lift at the corners of his mouth, while his eyes scanned the church as if he had entirely forgotten Fenolio.
"You're a shameless old man," he said, "and a liar in the bargain. But if you hope to impress me with your bare-faced lying and boasting the way you've impressed Basta, I must disappoint you. Your claims are ridiculous, just as you are, and it was more than stupid of Basta to bring you here, because now we have to get rid of you somehow."
Basta turned pale. He hurried over to Capricorn, head lowered in submission.
"But suppose he isn't lying?"
Maggie heard him whisper to Capricorn.
"They both say we will all die if we touch the old man."
Capricorn gave him a look of such contempt that Basta flinched backward as if he had been struck. Fenolio, however, looked as if he were enjoying himself hugely. It seemed to Maggie that he was watching the whole scene as if it were a play performed especially for him.
"Poor Basta," he said to Capricorn, "you're doing him a great injustice again, for he's right. Suppose I'm not lying. Suppose I really did invent you both, you and Basta. Will you simply dissolve into thin air if you do anything to me? It seems very likely."
Capricorn laughed, but Maggie sensed he was thinking over what Fenolio had said, and it made him uneasy, even if he was taking great pains to hide his concern under a mask of indifference.
"I can prove I am what I say I am," said Fenolio so quietly that apart from Capricorn only Basta could hear his words. "Shall I do it here, in front of your men and those women? Shall I tell them about your parents?"
All was quiet in the church now. No one moved, neither Basta nor the other men waiting at the foot of the steps. Even the women cleaning the floor under the tables straightened up to look at Capricorn and the strange old man. Mortola was standing beside his chair, her chin jutting out as if that would help her to hear what they were whispering about. Capricorn inspected his cufflinks in silence. They were like drops of blood on his pale shirt. Then, at last, he turned his colourless eyes to Fenolio's face again.
"Say what you like, old man, but if you value your life, say it so that only I can hear."
He spoke softly, but Maggie heard the fury in his voice, suppressed with difficulty, but lurking behind every word. She had never felt more afraid of him. Capricorn signed to Basta, who reluctantly took a few steps backward.
"I suppose the child can hear what I have to say?" asked Fenolio, putting his hand on Maggie's shoulder. "Or are you afraid of her, too?"
Capricorn did not even look at Maggie. He had eyes only for the old man who had invented him.
"Well, come on. Let's hear you, even if you have nothing to say. You're not the first person to try saving his skin in this church with a few lies. But if you hedge your bets any longer, I'll tell Basta to wrap a pretty little viper around your neck. I always keep a few around the place for such occasions."
Even this threat didn't particularly impress Fenolio.
"Very well," he said, looking all around him as if sorry not to have a larger audience. "Where shall I begin? First, something basic. A storyteller never writes down everything he knows about his characters. There's no need for readers to know everything. Some of it is better kept secret between the author and his creations. Take him, for instance," he added, pointing to Basta. "I always knew he was a very unhappy boy before you picked him up. As it says in another very fine book, it's terribly easy to persuade children that they are worthless.
Buster was convinced of it. Not that you taught him any better. Oh, no. Why would you? But suddenly, here was someone to whom he could devote himself, someone who told him what to do. He'd found a god, Capricorn, and if you treated him badly, well, who says that all gods are kindly? Most of them are stern and cruel, wouldn't you agree? I didn't write all this in the book. I knew it. That was enough. But never mind, Buster, now. Let's move on to you.
Capricorn's eyes did not move from Fenolio. His face was as rigid as if it had turned to stone.
Capricorn.
Fenolio's voice sounded almost tender as he spoke the name. He gazed over Capricorn's shoulder as if he had forgotten that the man he was talking about was standing right in front of him and no longer existed, only in an entirely different world between the covers of a book.
He has another name, too, of course, but even he doesn't remember it. He has called himself Capricorn since he was 15, after the star sign under which he was born. Capricorn, the unapproachable, unfathomable, insatiable, who likes to play God or the devil as the fancy takes him. The devil doesn't have a mother, though, does he? Fenolio then looked Capricorn in the eye. But you do.
Maggie looked up at the magpie. She had come to the edge of the steps, listening, her bony hands clenched into fists.
"You like to spread the rumour that she was of noble birth," Fenolia went on. "Indeed, it sometimes even pleases you to say she was a king's daughter, and your father, you claim, was an armourer at her father's court. A very nice story, too. Shall I tell you my version?"
For the first time, Maggie saw something like fear on Capricorn's face. A nameless fear without beginning or end, and behind it, hatred rose like a vast black shadow. Maggie felt sure Capricorn wanted to strike Fenolio to the ground, but his fear was too strong, leaving him helpless to act. Did Fenolio see that too?
Go on. Tell your story. Why not?
Capricorn's eyes were unblinking like a snake's. Fenolio smiled as mischievously as one of his grandsons.
Very well, let's go on.
The tale of the court armourer was all lies, of course. Maggie still had a feeling that the old man was enjoying himself enormously. He might have been teasing a kitten. Did he know so little about his own creation?
Capricorn's father was an ordinary blacksmith. He went on, refusing to let the cold rage in Capricorn's eyes distract him. He made his son play with hot coals, and sometimes he beat him almost as hard as he beat the iron he forged. There were blows if the boy ever showed pity, and more blows for shedding tears, and for every time the lad said, "I can't, or I'll never do it." Power is all that counts, he taught his son. Rules are made by the strongest, so be sure that you're the one who makes them. Capricorn's mother thought that was the only real truth in the world, and she told her son day in, day out, that one day he would be the strongest of all. She was no princess, but a serving maid with coarse hands and roughened knees, and she followed her son like a shadow, even when he began to be ashamed of her and invented a new mother and new father for himself. She admired him for his cruelty, she loved to see the terror he spread abroad, and she loved his ink-black heart. Your heart is a stone, Capricorn, a black stone with about as much human sympathy as a lump of coal, and you are very, very proud of that.
Capricorn went on playing with his cufflink, turning it around and looking at it as intently as if he were giving all his attention not to Fenolia's words, but to the little red piece of metal. When the old man fell silent, Capricorn carefully pulled the sleeve of his jacket down over his wrist and brushed a speck of fluff off his arm. With it he seemed to have brushed off his anger. His pale, indifferent eyes no longer showed rage, hatred, or fear.
"That really is an amazing story, old man," he said in a quiet voice. "I like it. You're a born liar, so I shall keep you here.
for the time being, until I tire of your stories.
Keep me here. Fenolia stood very straight. I've no intention of staying here. What on earth?
But Capricorn put a hand over his mouth.
Not another word, he hissed. Basta has told me about your 3 grandchildren. If you give me any trouble, or tell your lies not to me but to my men, I shall get Basta to gift-wrap a few young vipers and leave them outside your grandchildren's door. Do I make myself clear, old man?
Fenolio's head drooped, as if Capricorn had broken his neck with nothing but a few softly spoken words. When he looked up again, fear showed in every wrinkle of his face. With a satisfied smile, Capricorn put his hands in his pants pockets.
"Yes, you all love something, soft-hearted as you are," he said. "Children, grandchildren, brothers and sisters, parents, dogs, cats, canary birds. There are no exceptions. Farmers, shopkeepers, even policemen have families, or at least keep a dog. You have only to look at her father."
Capricorn pointed at Maggie so suddenly she jumped.
"He'll come here, even though he knows I won't let him go again any more than I will let his daughter go. He'll come all the same. Isn't this world an amazing place?"
"Amazing indeed," murmured Fenolio, and for the first time he looked at his creation with revulsion rather than admiration. Capricorn seemed to prefer that.
"Basta," he called, beckoning him. Basta strolled over deliberately slowly.
He was still looking sulky.
"Take the old man to the room where we once locked Darius," Capricorn ordered, "and post a guard outside the door." "You want me to take him into your house?"
Basta sounded surprised.
"Yes, why not? After all, he claims to be almost like a father to me. Anyway, his tales amuse me."
Basta shrugged and grasped Fenolio's arm. Maggie looked at the old man, horrified. She would soon be all alone with nothing but the windowless walls and a locked door. But Fenolio reached for her hand before Basta could haul him away.
"Leave the girl with me," he said to Capricorn. "You can't shut her up in that hole again all by herself. And I promised her father I'd look after her."
Capricorn turned his back, looking indifferent.
"As you like. Her father will be here soon, in any case."
Yes, Mo would come. Maggie could think of nothing else as Fenolio led her away with him, his arm around her shoulders, as if he really could protect her from Capricorn and Basta and all the others. But he couldn't. Would Mo be able to protect her? Of course not. He mustn't come, she thought. Please. Perhaps he won't be able to find the way again. He mustn't come. Yet there was nothing she wanted more. Nothing in the whole wide world.
Chapter 35. Different Aims. It was Farid who saw the car. Dustfinger was lying under the trees as it came along the road. He was trying to think clearly, but since learning that Capricorn was back, he couldn't pull his thoughts together. He still didn't know where to look for the book. The leaves of the trees cast shadows on his face. The sun sent white-hot needles down through the branches, and his forehead felt feverish. Basta and Flatnose were back too, of course. What had he expected? Had he thought they'd stay away forever?
"Why get so agitated, Dustfinger?" he whispered up at the leaves. "You didn't have to come back here. You knew it would be dangerous."
Then he heard footsteps approaching rapidly.
"A grey car!"
Farid had run so fast he was gasping for breath as he flung himself down on the grass beside Dustfinger.
"I think it's Silver Tongue."
Dustfinger jumped up.
The boy knew what he was talking about. He really could tell those stinking metal beetles apart from one another. He himself had never got the knack of it. He quickly followed Farid to where there was a view of the bridge. The road wound away from it toward Capricorn's village like a slow-moving snake. They didn't have much time if they wanted to stop Silvertongue. At top speed, they stumbled down the hillside. Farid was